Hello.
Hello. And welcome
to My Favorite Murder.
That's Georgia Hartstar.
That's Karen Kilgariff.
And I'm Jake Brennan. And this is Disgraceland.
Yes.
Yes.
We nailed it.
We've done the crossover.
I think you guys nailed it. I think I fucked it up. I don't know.
No, it was perfect.
Yeah, it was great.
Love it.
We did
okay,
it.
Now let's take it again, and this time with more energy and less energy.
Less energy on certain words,
yes.
and other
more
words.
You'll know.
You guys did an audiobook. When you did it, did somebody produce you guys doing it?
Oh, yeah.
Or did you produce yourself?
Oh, no.
Right, right. Same here. And I found it to be highly annoying. Like, it was driving me crazy with people telling me how to talk into a microphone.
But. Oh, my God. They didn't tell us how to talk. I mean, thankfully.
Lucky.
I think because I would assume because you're a podcaster, you wouldn't need that much like
help.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do it a lot.
I know. One would think.
Yeah.
Wait, did you get notes like, can you do it again with more whatever?
Yeah. Yeah, literally. Like, I had an engineer in the booth. Like, I got really fed up really quickly, and he got my note, put it that way. Like, back off, dude. I got very passive aggressive about it, and it ended up working out okay. But it was like, what the hell? Why? You know, like,
no.
Yeah.
I feel like it being you being a podcaster and you having written the book, it's not like it's some other authors. Like when we did our audio book, people are like, are you going to do the audio? And it's like, well, yeah. That's
what audio's our thing.
I would love it to be Julia Roberts because I fucking hate my voice, but.
You have a great voice. Although,
thank you.
I'll read your next book. I'll go on record.
Oh,
right
good.
Now.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Let's switch it up.
Yeah, let's do it. You can read mine. There we go.
Great. How about you write our next book and we write your next book?
That would be hysterical.
That. Actually, that you just volunteered for way harder homework for us.
You really did.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Research. I don't need to do research.
So much research.
How much research? You do so much research, right? Like that's your...
Yeah.
You did a homework podcast like us.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone asked me the other day whose English is this dad was at my son's birthday party, and this dad he's Greek and English is his second language, and he was like, "How much homework do you have to do?" Like he literally didn't say research; he said homework. But it's a lot. I've got it down to a system now. It's like basically a week of research to spend a week writing an episode.
Wow!
It used to be a lot more.
And do you have researchers or any support?
Not for Disgraceland. I have worked in a couple other writers here and there. But then for our other shows, we have a bunch of writers and we have one full-time researcher on staff, my dad.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Cool. He gave me the love of reading and now we pay him to read. So it's all worked out. But for me, I like to, if it's something that I'm writing directly, I want to be able to research it because it just gives me the right point of view, you know?
Definitely.
Right. And it's something you're already interested in. So it's not, you probably read that book or you already know the story a little bit, right?
Totally. I feel like that was the sort of unknown leg up that I had in the beginning, this advantage that it's this subject matter that I've just spent my whole life immersed in music and music history. Mm. And I don't need to do a lot of like if I was doing a podcast on politics or something, I'd probably have to do a lot more research just to get a base level of information. But with music, I'm pretty well schooled already. So it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
I love that. I feel like the same way where it's like, I'm obsessed with true crime. So doing the research is just me reading a ton of articles or books about it. And Karen and I are already fascinated with it. So it's easy.
For me, it's just like, oh, I actually remembered that completely wrong. Most of the time when I'm reading, I'm like, remember that crazy story where this and that? And then I'm reading it. I'm like, I don't know where I got half of that story.
Yeah.
Thank God I'm doing this actual research.
Yeah. Although I'm old enough now where I've heard stories that I feel like have been erased from the internet that I think are true. You know what I mean? But they're just like, I've gone back to look for them. I'm like, I know I read this somewhere reputable 30 years ago or something. And like now I can't find it anywhere.
Do you think like Mick Jagger's people have scrubbed it out?
Yeah.
Or is it that kind of situation perhaps?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Ooh.
Scrubbed from the internet is Jake Brennan's next podcast.
Yeah, scrubbed. The research on that is so hard.
You have to go to the microfish every single time in the basement of the library. You're screwed.
Yes. Yeah. God. Imagine, how hard would it be for us to do our shows? Just do this, just create this content in another era, in a pre-internet era.
Yeah.
It would be I mean, I don't know that it would be impossible. We'd probably find a way to make it work in that world. But now it's like, I mean, I'm writing on my phone constantly, researching. The efficiency is like crazy. So like, whenever I'm bemoaning the era we live in and all the annoying things about technology, I try to remember how much easier it makes things.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I think is wild? That like, I'm always like talking to my inner child, right? So sometimes I'll go back and be like, what if I could tell my childhood self? I couldn't tell her what she's going to be when she grows up because it doesn't exist yet.
And it doesn't make sense.
What am I going to be? I don't get it.
Yeah. Did you do the thing with the guidance counselor where they give you a test and yes. they tell you what you're going to be when you grow up? Did they do that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
What was yours?
God.
Do you remember?
I'm sure it said something like communications, which I took as a, like, oh, this is a good sign. Mm. But I mean, what the hell else was it going to be? Because I can't do math and I'm, you know, not really apt with anything else. But I do feel like it was something where I was like, yes, another sign that I should do stand-up comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like, it's not though.
I feel like that the options then were so limited. Like I didn't know you could go to school to be a chef. Like if I knew that I could have gone to school to be a chef, you know, or like, you know, even like a hairdresser, that would have been so exciting. Like something you're actually interested in rather than communications. What did you get?
I literally got a blank stare and it was like, we don't know what you're going to be, but you're going to work for yourself. Like that's nice. What it was. And at the time I took that as like, I'm going to be like a psychopath and be in jail. Like I didn't know that was a thing. You could work for yourself. You know what I mean? I thought, the options were like, you can go work in construction or you can be a cop or you can be a teacher. And then that was pretty much my world purview at that point in junior high. I didn't think there were other options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are we supposed to choose? Like even at 18, like you're just going to choose, like you have kids, whatever they want to be right now. What if they had to stick to that for the rest of their lives?
Right. Because you usually base it on like the friends you're with.
Right.
Right. When you're 17, you know nothing.
Nothing.
I knew nothing when I was 17.
No one knows anything at 17.
Nothing.
Your brain isn't fully formed until you're like out of college.
Right. I feel like college should happen when you're like 30 to 35.
Yeah.
Yes. And you're actually interested in like, oh, I should be improving myself in some way.
Right.
Let me actually try at this. Whereas, I felt forced. It felt like an extension of high school.
Yes.
And all I wanted to do, I just was so excited to be like on my own that I was always just like cutting class and like, oh my God, there's a campus Burger King. I'm going over there. Like, oh my God, I can drink beer right now and no one will know and I won't get in trouble. Like just hedonistic insanity.
Yeah. How old were you when you realized you really wanted to be a stand-up comic?
I mean, pretty young. They started putting stand-up on TV all the time in like the early 80s. Mm. So it became this kind of thing that like was one of the very overt choices. And luckily in San Francisco, Alex Bennett hosted, it was on PBS. It was a stand-up show. So it was local stand-up comics in San Francisco doing sets. So it was like, it felt so close. It wasn't like Hollywood, you know? Mm. It was like you could drive over the bridge and see these people. And they were hilarious and amazing. So it felt like it was kind of being served up all the time. So I think from a young age.
That's amazing.
Jake, when did you do your first, when were you in your first band, like legit band?
My first legit band was, I was like 19, I think, when I joined. So I was already out of high school and I was in college and they were older kids. They were kind of like local, like in the hardcore scene. They were like, you know, they were kind of like stars, you know what I mean? In our little area. So it was intimidating. Mm-hmm. And I tried out and I got in the band and then like we played our first show and then our second show was immediately booked and it just kind of like just started going and going. And I was like, whoa, okay. And I wasn't even really sure I wanted to be in that band, you know, but it was such an opportunity.
Yeah.
It turned out to be great and a lot of fun and very like, you know, probably the most formative years of my life. And then it's like, oh yeah, I want to be a musician. And like, what a tremendously complicated decision that is for somebody to make at 19 years old to try and figure out the rest of their life.
What did you play?
I sang. I was the front man. And then I ended up playing guitar in other bands after that and singing. And
what was the band? Come on. Can we find them? Or have you scrubbed them from the internet?
No, they're not scrubbed. You can find them on Spotify. That band was, we ended up signing to Victory Records, which is still a big hardcore label. Huge. And that band was called Cast Iron Hike. And then I did like a solo thing after that. And then I was in this other thing called Bodega Girls, which had a thing going on for a bit. And it was these periods of like, I really know what I want to do. And then long periods of like, am I getting anywhere? Am I doing anything at all? And then of course you're on track, you think again. And then the summation of all that, by the time I met my wife in my mid 30s, I was like, what the fuck have I done with my, you know, what is happening?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause she was like private school, private high school, New England high school, then goes to music school, like then grad school. Like she was on a track, you know what I mean? And I was not, and I was really fighting above my weight class when it came to like getting together with my wife. I overshot.
Nice.
Don't tell her
that. Good job. Good job. Good job.
But anyways, now I look back at it and I realize everything I did, all of it, every stupid decision I made, every like 10-hour van ride I was in to go play a show to four people, every dumb book I read and shitty album I wasted money on that I no longer listen to, all of it contributed to what I do now.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I didn't know it then, but I know it now and I'm so grateful and I wouldn't change a thing.
It's amazing.
It's like you can't know it then. You're not supposed to know it then. I feel bad for kids these days because they have social media to all get on there and be like, I don't know what to do. Or they feel like they're comparing themselves to people who are really fake, or they're telling like kind of a story, you know, that whole like, I'm a millionaire and I'm 21 or whatever. It's like, that's bullshit. It's not real. You're supposed to go and be lost and not know and be bummed out. And then because of that, do something about it.
Right. Yes.
You're not supposed to be comfortable the whole time and you're not supposed to be happy the whole time. You're supposed to like get knocked around a little bit so that you can land and then look back and be like, fucking thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to like build resilience. It doesn't just happen.
For real.
Yeah.
But I love that what you're saying, because I feel like we're similar in that way of like all the true crime, creepy shit we watched that everyone talked shit, like what is wrong with you stuff.
Yeah.
Who the fuck knew it would be our careers?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, you were practicing how to be in front of the microphone.
Right.
Yeah.
And you too, Karen. It's.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like all the times that, you know, like slumber parties where it's like, I can't stop talking because that's actually my anxiety response, unlike other people's. And then it's like being able to whisper in a 12-year-old me's ear of like, you're going to make money from being a crazy, weird show off. don't worry. It's going to pay off being kind of a freak like this.
It's pretty nice. Inspiring.
It's pretty nice.
It is. I wonder, it is, you know, in reading your book too, like the thing that hit me, and I know this had something to do with the success of that you guys have, it's the era in which we were raised or not raised. You know what I mean? You know, like I'm 11 years older than my wife, and it's like her parents, they're not necessarily like my parents are really, my mom was a young mom and her mom was a little older. So they're almost the same age, but her stepdad is the same difference in age from me that I am with my wife, just in the other direction. So wow. She was raised in almost like with this, under this different generation of kind of the first generation of, you know, millennials, where it's like, we're, to the parents' credit, it's like, we're going to do this right. We're going to like, we're going to parent, we're going to actually pay attention to our kids. You know what I mean?
Can you imagine? I mean, I feel like we wouldn't have had a lot of fun that we had. However, I wouldn't need as much therapy as I
need
to.
Right, yeah, right.
They were right to make the change.
Maybe.
Oh, was that a slam? Was that just a light slam from Jake Brennan?
No, not at all. Not at all. Just we can't blame our parents for everything. You know?
Yes, we can. I'm kidding.
I've atoned. I told you, I already hired my father. I'm done.
I know. I love that. Does that inform how you raise your kids too? Are they, I bet they're the cool kids.
I think they're cool.
You'd hope. One would hope.
Yeah, they're definitely cooler than I am. But, you know, I know I'm doing it wrong in some way. You know, like I feel like my parents did it wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of feel like if you ask my wife, she'd probably say her parents did it wrong. And if you ask my kids, they're definitely going to say we did it wrong. Like we haven't hacked this parenting thing. It's like it's been either like no attention, too much attention, or whatever the hell I'm doing now, which I don't even know what it is.
It's It's real back and forth, like it's real hot and cold.
Yeah, it's, I mean, no, I love my kids. And, you know, I built this studio so that I, you know, right next to my house so that I could be around them as much as possible and not have to take 2 hours out of my day to work. You know, like all of it's intentional. But at the end of the day, is it going to help them in the end? I really hope so, but who the hell knows, you know?
Yeah,
true. Because your dad was in a band, right?
Mm-hmm. So rad.
And it's a band that opened for the Ramones. So not just like a dad band just kicking around at like the Mexican restaurant down the street, but like a band.
Ramones. And you were at that show, right?
I was, yeah. My dad was and is to some extent. I mean, he's older now, obviously, but my whole life a professional working musician, like very blue collar. I mean, he was signed to CBS Records when I was really young. And then he was later signed to Atlantic Records with another band. But the Ramones thing happened when he was working with Ed Stasium, who was the producer who produced Ramones Records. And they did a show together. And it was at this period, you know, now I know, I didn't know then. It was at this period in the Ramones' career in the early 80s when they weren't really doing much. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they played this like real divey place in Rhode Island that my dad's band opened up for. And I remember my dad's, whose credit was like, you know, made sure I came to the show. We didn't live together, so it was a big thing. My dad had to drive out, get me an hour away, bring me to another state, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I remember him telling me the importance of the band, you know, and being like, this is an important band. They're not your ordinary band. I didn't know anything. I was like, well, what are they like? He's like, you know, I was into the Beach Boys, I guess, at the time. Bob Aran was like, I couldn't stop listening to that song. But he's like, they're like the Beach Boys, but just really, really loud. And sure enough, to my like 10-year-old self or whatever age I was, you know, that's what they were. But I got to be like, I was like backstage and it was like super grimy punk rock, you know, like it was not, you know, when I started seeing movie, like biopics, music biopics later, I was like, that's not what I remember. You know what I mean? Like, so I already kind of had this thing in my head that like, maybe we're not getting the real story, you know? And then I was in bands and I, you know, when you're in a band and you're on the road, especially in the pre-internet days, you hear all these stories and there were stories that I would hear from my dad or my dad's bandmates and about other bands and other musicians that are just crazy stories that lo and behold, most of which turned out to be true.
Yeah.
So, you know, by the time I'm in a band, I can't shut up about this shit. You know what I mean? I'm like, did you know Jerry Lee Lewis killed his wife? And my bandmates are like, shut the fuck up. We don't care. We've heard the story a million times.
Yep.
And then it, you know, it ends up being a podcast.
Hell yeah.
You just told the perfect origin story.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, this is actually how it came to be.
Yeah.
Karen wrote some questions before this, which I really appreciate.
Okay.
And there was one on there that I was like, oh, I want to hear that. And now I can't fucking find it. Hold on 1 second.
I didn't know how this is supposed to work. Should I have had questions as well? Because I can just riff and come up with some.
No. Oh my God, please don't ask us anything.
How dare you?
No, we wrote you some questions to ask us.
Nice.
Oh, the question was something along the lines, Karen, of like, is there anything you want to cut? Because like Karen and I, there's certain true crime stories we will never, ever cover because they're horrendous or, you know,
just
illegal.
We can't talk about them the way we talk about most things.
Right.
Or we wouldn't want to.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, it would just kind of shut it down a little bit for us.
Yeah. So are there any musicians or any like stories you want to cover that just like legally or whatever reason you can't cover?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you two answers. On the legal side, there was an artist, total fucking loser, big artist, but a wicked loser. Okay. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say, not going to name any of his songs.
Okay.
He was just a loser, okay?
Oh, I see.
But he had a lot of other loser friends that were part of this big, some would call it a church. Other people might call it a cult. Anyways, I was going to do a story on this loser. It was going to be the third or fourth episode of Disgraceland. And before Disgraceland came out, I was just like, I'm doing this thing, you know? And I made a website and I put what the subjects were going to be. And then the first few episodes hit and I got all this press like out of nowhere and like real like magazines or editorials online. And that loser's loser lawyer from the loser cult got in touch with me. It was like
before you even did it.
Yeah, it was like 2 days before. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going in on this headache. So that didn't happen.
No way.
It just was
they
not.
They kind of did you a favor though.
They really did.
You had
they
posted really that.
If the podcast ended, if Disgraceland ended up being just the thing that no one knew about, you know what I mean? Like right. It wouldn't have mattered. But at that point, really quickly, people did know.
Yeah.
And I remember like I had one friend who's like, oh, you're a fucking sellout. I was like, fuck you, man. Like you go turn
you're a sellout?
Yeah, just like, you know, your drunk friend in your ear giving you shit. I'm from Boston, New England. Like everyone gives everyone shit. That's how we bond,
right,
you know?
Right.
but it just wasn't worth the headache. But then the other side of it is I don't like to tell stories that involve abuse with children because it's really sad and upsetting and gross. And honestly, who wants to listen to that? I don't want to listen to it. I don't want to have my head in that. And there's a lot of that in the music business, as we know.
Yeah.
I try to stay away from it as much as possible. It creeps in every now and then because you have to acknowledge it sometimes with some artists, even if you're telling a different story. So I've stayed away from the R. Kelly and the Michael Jackson things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. However, I'm going in. It's time. I feel like I can tell the story. I'm good enough at what I do now that I can tell the story in a way that isn't going to be disgusting, that can still be respectful and still to the victims and still tell the story. I feel like I know I have enough confidence to do it now. But as a rule, I try to stay away from. That's the type of stuff I try to stay away from.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
And also those R. Kelly victims have had their say now, which that documentary was done so well.
Right.
That sometimes it's good to follow that stuff where you're just like, well, here's how I would do it, but they get to say it first.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, good point.
How do you like come to terms with, here's an example, John Lennon and people who you respect and love musically, but like kind of are pieces of shit in real life?
It's kind of every single episode. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like every single episode almost. I mean, I'm writing about Robert Johnson now, the old blues guy who's like, you know, lauded and just these glowing books and scholarly novel, not all this whole thing. And it's like, when you really read about what the dude was getting up to, was not good. You know, but he was like 25, 26 years old. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying you know, I mean, he wasn't like killing people. And with John Lennon, it's like, you know, John Lennon was a really complicated guy.
Yeah.
And I try to, without making excuses for these artists, I try to be objective and empathetic and take into account everything that's going on. Like, we don't know what it's like to be the biggest pop star on the planet, you know, with Taylor Swift. We have people criticize Taylor Swift like it's a fucking job. No one has any idea what it's like to be Taylor Swift except Taylor Swift. And the fact that she's managed, whether you love her or hate her, managed to get her career to the point where it's at without losing her mind is, it's an achievement, you know? So
it really is.
I try to not lose sight of that. And I think, honestly, I think that's why people relate to Disgraceland, because of that nuance. And there's not a lot of nuance anymore. It's either everything. Our whole discourse is devolved into I'm right, you're fucking evil. It doesn't matter what the subject matter is. That's what it is.
Yep.
And Disgraceland is not that.
Love it.
Well, it's also what I really like is kind of like the journey of fame. And like, it's hard for us to understand people that have never stood in front of a football field arena full of people and rocked them and had every single person be like screaming or whatever. Look, our live shows are great, but it's not the same thing.
Soccer field 2022.
Yes, for real.
My Favorite Murder and Disgraceland are going on.
We're going on tour. We're going to rock the world. But, you know, when you see those like live at Wembley concerts and it's just like all the arms going like this and it's 80,000 people or whatever, it's like, right, you don't walk off stage from that and go like, well, I got to turn in early because I need to take care of myself. Yes. Like, you know that what happens after that is a world full of people going, whatever you want.
Right.
And like, we none of us would know what we would do if that was our world. George and I are like, yeah, I'm fucking mac and cheese at 12:30 at night or whatever. It's like, that's
our groupie mac and cheese.
Yeah. You're eating the shit out of that mac and cheese with like...
Oh, it's happening.
Snorting it off the dresser.
But there is a thing, you know, you get off stage... And there's a chemical thing where you have all this adrenaline and you can't just shut down. You can't shut it off. And that's like when you introduce drugs into that as well and then trying to just calibrate your life as a functioning member of society. I mean, it's unlike anything civilians have to go through at all.
Yeah. Drugs, groupies.
Yeah. The fun stuff. You made a good point too that it's like with like Oasis or someone like that, like they were 19 years old when they became huge stars, all of them, Beatles, everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, as we said, 17-year-olds are stupid. 19-year-olds aren't that much smarter.
No.
You know?
Yeah. George Harrison quit the Beatles when he was 27. 27.
Holy shit.
Just come on. I mean, what the fuck?
He'd had enough.
You know, I had my head so far up my own ass at 27 years old. Never mind being in the Beatles. That's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right. I was a data entry and I was going crazy, you know, wilding out and stuff. Ugh. Should we pivot to what we heard from you is an amazing hometown story?
Let's pivot.
I didn't mean to say we heard from you, meaning like, we don't know if it's good, but you keep saying it is.
Well,
that's not what I meant.
Yeah. This, I have to say, the celebrity hometown thing made me think like, oh, what's gone on in my hometown? And then when I thought about it for a minute, I was like, holy shit. I had a laundry list. I was like, I could talk about 5 different things here. You know what I mean? Which,
what's your hometown?
Clinton, Massachusetts. There's only one way to tell the story, and this is with me in it because I'm part of this crime.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Love it. First person hometown. I don't, when's the last time that's happened?
Yeesh. I gotta be careful. So, what are the statute of limitations? to set the stage, so Clinton, Mass is where I grew up. It's like 40 miles west of Boston, small town, beautiful town. But if you've ever seen here's a fun factoid. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records, my town, in 1977 for the most bars per square mile.
Holy shit.
Swear to God.
Oh, okay.
I see it.
Okay.
So, I get it all. Yeah.
Coincidentally, you can't walk 10 feet without passing a funeral parlor. So there's lots of funeral parlors, lots of bars.
Wow.
If you've ever seen a Boston gangster movie or whatever about like South Boston, like Southie, which we all have, it's Clinton's like the sort of like small town version of Southie. It's not in the city. It's a mill town. It's a beautiful New England town, but it's got kind of like a creepy element to it. Okay. And to prove that, the Stephen King series, Castle Rock, which was, that was filmed in Clinton, the first season. Tim, did you guys see it? Did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where Tim Robbins works, that's the street I grew up on. That street. Like,
wow.
Where the whole finale takes place is literally the exact spot I got drunk for the first time in my life on the train tracks. They're filming.
That must have been a trip.
They're filming the new Stephen King, Salem's Lot, there right now. And I think one of the American Horror, which I've never seen, was filmed there too. So it's like, it's got like these old Victorians. It looks really cool. So just to give you a couple small bites at the true crime thing here, one true crime, one myth thing. So when I was in elementary school, they found this girl's body about 2 houses down from mine, completely just savagely murdered. And I know the family, so I don't really want to go into that. But it was like, I wonder now, like things happen to you when you're younger and you just take them for granted. And then you start to think about them as an adult. You're like, what if any effect did that have on me? I don't think it had much, but it did happen. And there was out on the town line next to the town next door, there was this place called Blood Forest. And it was founded by this guy in the 40s named Arthur Blood. And there was all these like stories about kids who died there. And literally, I saw this. This is the God's honest truth. There's something biological that is going on with the pond in the middle of Blood Forest. And on a full moon, I swear to God, anyone in Clinton who hears this will know I'm telling the truth. And I know you guys have listeners in Clinton. When the moon falls down on the pond, it's red. And when the moon is full, and there's something in like at the bottom of the pond that makes it look like blood. So Blood Forest, but that's not true crime.
What? So. You can't name a place Blood Forest and think everything's going to be fine. Like what the fuck? What is like?
But what's crazy is it's after a guy's name, right? So it could have just as easily been like Brown Forest. But really creepy.
Right.
That's so creepy.
I believe it was Arthur Blood. I think that was the name.
Wild. That's in a book.
Yeah, exactly. It's in a Stephen King book. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not true crime. And there, so the true crime one, so this is this cartel thing. Okay. This crazy drug cartel story with a missing kid. So like you guys, we kind of hit on this earlier. I was a juvenile delinquent as a child.
Nice. Like, mm-hmm.
Total latchkey kid like you guys, left to my own devices. By the time I got into high school, you know, I was less of a juvenile delinquent and more of just like a stoner high school kid. Like all I wanted to do, like my main motivation in life was to just smoke pot with my friends and listen to music and talk about music and play music and and have a good time.
I mean, it is pretty great.
It's like, Karen's like, yeah.
Sorry,
like
how are things changed for any of
I know exactly.
And what do we
It's everyone's goal.
So I'm saying this for the reason that pot was really important to us, okay? Like, if we didn't have pot, there was a problem. And we used to buy weed at Mr. Donut. Mr. Donut was like an off-brand Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes.
Okay?
Like, oh my God, I love it.
Clinton has since graduated. We now have a Dunkin' Donuts, so.
R.I.P. to Mr. Donut.
To Mr. Donut.
So we used to go in and you could buy, I think it was like, you know, give me one jelly and it was like an eighth of weed, two jellies, and you'd get a quarter ounce and you would get the donuts in the bag, right? So then this summer, I thought it was the summer going into my sophomore year, but
I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt you.
Sure.
Did you get the donuts and the pot? I would hope to God.
Yeah.
So
So they get in there, but you still got the donuts. Yeah. So when you went and got high, you would have donuts after.
Yes.
Was it some teenager? Like, was it one guy when he was working, you could go in, or was it just like Mr. Donut that was
one guy?
The operation.
One guy. And I so want to say his name, but I can't say his name.
He should get the credit. Yeah.
One guy who had this connection. And
got it.
We didn't know who the connection was, you know what I mean? But we knew there was a connection, obviously. Then all of a sudden, in this one summer, there's no weed at all. Like none, nothing. Mm-hmm. No one in town has grass and it's a problem. Like no one at Mr. Donut, no one anywhere. And we start to hear these rumors that the main guy got busted, the main connection, right? And this guy is like, we just know him as the connect. Like I said, like we don't know anything about him. But then things start to creep out. These other rumors about this dude. Turns out he's not just your everyday, ordinary drug dealer. He's like Colombian cartel connected drug dealer who lives in the town next to ours. And everything is moving in off the islands of Massachusetts, coming up on boats from South America, and he's bringing it in, and we're like the first town on the drug route.
Yes.
So you don't get stems and seeds. No, you get the good,
the freshest weed buds of all time.
Well, I gotta say, we were like high school low kids on the totem pole, so we got crap all the time. It was not good.
I remember 80s weed. It was like, well, not for me, it was 90s, but stems and seeds.
Yeah. So this was 90. I thought it might have been earlier. It was 90. I looked this up. So in the summer drought, we called it the drought, these weird things, always the storyteller, I guess, these weird things start happening. The first thing that happens is my friend's dad, who I don't want to give too many details here because the guys, people know him. I will just say he was a man's man, like 6'5", badass dude, had a badass job in a position of authority. No one fucked with this guy. And all of a sudden, one night he's walking out of a bar, a van pulls up, he gets abducted, hood over the head, pulled into the car, beat to a pulp, bound and thrown in the bottom of a ditch. And no one did shit about it. No one did anything.
What?
Yeah. So it was some...
I'm sorry, was he killed?
He was not killed. He lived.
Oh, shit.
Which
holy shit.
Made it even weirder because it's this thing that no one talks about. Like still, you know, and I don't blame him. I wouldn't want to talk about it either. But the point is like if they're not talking about it, there's a reason. It's because someone doesn't want them to be talking about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that happens. The drought happens. The abduction happens. Then this kid from the next town over who we knew is a local drug dealer, high school kid, goes missing. This kid, Richie Tuttle. Yeah. And all the rumors start. He was dealing for the main guy. He said something. He's dead. He killed him. Richie's buried out behind the Fung Wong restaurant. Like this whole Fung Wong was the Chinese restaurant in town. And now it's like scary. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're like, oh shit. All right. So around the same time this summer, this guy comes into town. This guy, Artie. Okay. He's older. He's in his 30s. He's hanging out with like high school kids, hitting on our girlfriends, driving our cars. Yeah. I mean, Georgia, this is like the guy your parents warned you about. You know what I mean? Like literally from central casting, tattoos, violence.
I remember there'd be the 30-year-old with the kid, and they'd just be like, oh, that's Danny. And like, it was fine. But it's like, looking back, it's like, why is a 30-year-old hanging out?
Yeah.
And buying a spear.
Yeah. Buying a spear. Well, this Danny, our Danny, Artie, we didn't mind because he all of a sudden was the only guy with pot. So it was like, okay, cool. Like,
you want to drive
Artie's
my car?
Cool.
Yeah.
Artie, look at this beautiful Artie. Corolla. Get in here.
This Corolla, you drove a Yugo. Come on.
Geo Metro. Yeah. Get in my Geo Metro.
Yes.
It's purple.
I'm thinking of cars now. I'm losing my train of thought. Anyways, Artie, we all started hanging out with Artie. God knows why, because he's got pot and he's buying us beer, I guess. So, like I said, I was a latchkey kid and my parents left me alone during the day and I had full rein. I never went to school. I skipped as much school as possible. I stayed home. I read books. I listened to music. Mm-hmm. But at night, they had me under lock and key. My mom, like I said, was young. She had me when she was 18. So she knew all the fucking stupid stuff I was getting up to. And would not, when she was around, she wouldn't let me out. I couldn't go out on school nights. So I don't know how this happened, but it was a school night. I must have got in a fight with my mom or something and just like split. But I was at this party, an apartment party. I'm 50, okay? I'm at some rando adult's apartment on like a Wednesday.
Oh my God. Skin is crawling. I can smell it. I can see it. I don't like it at all.
It's gross.
A lot of brown.
Yeah, a lot of browns and discernible like greens. You can't really tell which is which, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bong water is spilled.
Yeah. It's like, exactly. Jesus. You got to be careful which bottle you drink out of, bad lighting. Yeah.
Oh, that's my cigarette butts.
Cigarette butts.
Jesus.
In the Rolling Rock bottle. Yeah.
So. Let a Steely Dan. No,
Steely Dan.
No, you shouldn't be there.
Exactly. So I'm at this party and I'm with a couple of my friends, but it's largely an adult party. And it's Artie's how we got in there, I'm sure of it. But there's also these other grown-ups. I don't know who the hell they are. And they're like rough looking dudes. It's like a weird vibe. And I'll never forget, the 11 o'clock news comes on. Okay. On a Wednesday, I'm guessing, or Thursday, the 11 o'clock news comes on and everything gets like really serious all of a sudden. And everyone's watching the one television. And there's a newscast on this prison break at this local prison nearby, not in our town, but close by. And I realize the dudes I'm in the room with are watching themselves on television on the news about the prison break.
Oh my God.
They were having a prison break party and you got invited to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Did their photos come up and you like look to the right and look to the left?
I want to say yes, but I honestly do not know what the connection was that I made, but I knew, man. I knew and it clicked with Artie, the whole thing. And I was like, I just like skulked out of there and I went home and, you know,
you kissed your mother and
I
said,
kissed
you were
my
sorry.
Mom. I said, I was sorry. No,
please, mommy.
But that guy disappeared right after that. Never came back. No
Artie?
One, Yeah, already disappeared. I never fucked with those people again in any meaningful way. And, you know, going into my junior year, you know, I was thinking about this. Because of getting ready to tell you guys this story, I was thinking about this. I think that event had this transformative effect on me where I just was like, is this the path I'm going to go down, hanging out with fucking losers and end up like in jail or whatever? But yeah. So, you know, junior, senior year, when I went back to school, junior year and then senior year, those are the only 2 years I ever applied myself in school to get into college and to get out of town. And so it worked out all right. For Richie Tuttle, the kid who went missing, it did not work out right. They ended the drug kingpin guy, they caught one of his associates, he flipped, ratted out the kingpin, and they ended up pulling Richie Tuttle out of a pond in the next town over about 5 years later. Yeah, it was brutal.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Shit.
So he was just a teenage drug dealer who got caught up.
Yeah.
Oh man. It's so crazy that you think about those things where it's like, how upsetting is it that the decisions you make as a, you know, teenager can affect your whole life that much.
Yeah, that kid maybe just wanted to, like, he didn't want to get an after school job. Maybe some, like, he had a cousin that did it. That's always how that shit happens. It's like someone's older brother does it. So he's like, this is something I can do. It's no big deal.
Right.
And then suddenly they're caught up in a fucking cartel.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
It's crazy. It is horrible. I pray my kids never hear this podcast because I feel like I did a fair share of glorifying my juvenile delinquency here, but
no, you made it clear that, you know, Steely Dan and all of that will get you caught up. And
Steely Dan's never a good idea.
Steely Dan will drive you down a bad road. But this is the full circle thing of, like, that you have to kind of go through some shit and you have to see what your choices and maybe even the results of those choices could possibly be to go, is quote unquote being cool with this quote unquote cool group of people really where I want to go in my heart? Because, you don't. Like, you're doing, we all do at that age, especially, but kind of all our lives, we do what's kind of around us and what, you know, we think we're supposed to and what we think other people would think is cool. But yeah, that's a great, I mean, but also the idea that you're kind of like 15 trying to blend in and then you realize there's like escaped hardened criminals all around you.
Yeah. Yeah. I was with a couple of my friends. I don't want to cut them out of the story here. I don't want to go back to Clinton and get beat up. I just want to say.
Full credit. You think that's your story? Jake, what the fuck?
I invited you to that fucking party.
Yeah. Artie was my friend. Actually, I just remembered our Artie was named Shaky.
Oh my God.
I don't even know this guy's name. And he could have been a serial killer. Yeah. And I was like the girlfriend that he was trying to date, you know, that you mentioned. Like,
yes.
I was 13 and Shaky was driving us around buying us beer.
Yeah.
You never brought Shaky home to mom? You didn't?
My mom would have flipped. Even as Latchkey isn't around, she would have been like, you can't hang out with adults. Mm.
Yeah, right, for real.
And I'd be like, Mom, you're so uncool.
Shaky's awesome.
Shaky's awesome.
Don't make me unpopular, Mom.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that was it.
Wow.
I mean, that was a chef's kiss of a hometown, I have to tell you. I mean, you're a great storyteller anyway, but that really was.
Twisty-turny and little things here and there. That was,
Also, that's from a movie. A prison break and then the party gets quiet. Shh, quiet. I'm on the news.
Oh, I'm finally on TV.
Guys, circle up.
Circle up. Turn down the music.
Circle up.
Oh, shit.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Hats off to Clinton, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. You guys should come and play. They got a big old theater. You could jam it out. They have a soccer stadium, you know.
First night of our soccer stadium tour.
Yeah.
First and only night.
First and only.
Open and close.
It'll be like a one-off.
Yeah.
Do you ever do live shows?
I did. I tried it out. They were great. I sold out. I did three of them, one in Colorado, one in Boston, one in San Francisco. They were all awesome. I loved it.
Nice.
When I was doing it, I loved it. But then everything around it, I did not love. And it just reminded me of being in a band again and being away from my kids I didn't like. So I'm a creative person, obviously, at heart. And I can get my complete creative fill doing what I do with the podcast. Not to say I won't do it here and there again. I definitely will. But not to the extent that you guys are doing it. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah. It turns out, I didn't know this when we started. It turns out touring is hard.
Yeah.
Karen knew.
Yeah, I'm calloused over to it. And George is like, this is stressing me out. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't feel anything anymore. So
I don't have one friend left who's in a band who enjoys it. If they act like they are,
really?
Like they're lying. Because I hear them.
It's a young man's game for sure.
And it traps you too. Like I have this theory that like the old musicians like Dylan, these guys who are like still touring constantly, that they're doing it because they think now it's all they can do. And if they stop, they will die.
Right.
And I think there's some truth in that.
Yes.
You can get trapped in it, you know?
I saw one of Tom Petty's last concerts and I was like, what are they doing? Go home. It's past your bedtime.
But it's all they've ever done. I mean, especially Tom Petty. Wait, Tom Petty, you just did a perfect segue.
Hey, that's right.
Tom Petty is in the new season 9 of Disgraceland.
That's right.
Yes. Tom Petty, Taylor Swift, Juice WRLD, George Harrison, the Eagles, two-parter on the Eagles. Too much cocaine. He couldn't fit it all into one episode.
So much cocaine. You talk so fast for both of those episodes. You just like speed through it and then smoke 3 cigarettes.
How in the middle of like Ep 2, I'm pitching my screenplay to some random dude.
Opening your restaurant called Mr. Donut. It's going to be great. Hear me out.
You get donuts and you get weed. It used to be illegal. It's not anymore. Let's do this thing.
What?
It's called Stems and Seeds. Here we go.
You know, you're saying all this, we're making fun of cokeheads, and I'm like deep into Seinfeld right now. Like why? Because it's on Netflix, so I'm working my way again through the whole season instead of the syndicated ones. And like, basically, I think Kramer's just like a cokehead character, right? He's always pitching these random ideas he has. He's got way too much energy, you know?
It's sliding like implied through that door.
Cokehead. Yeah, I could totally see that. Yeah.
Very true.
So yeah, Disgraceland. You can get Tom Petty, George Harrison, all, you know, we had tons of episodes. Cardi B, Grateful Dead, Rolling Stones, all available for free. Amazon.com/Disgraceland.
Amazing. And you have multiple spinoffs of the podcast too, which is so rad.
We have another show called Badlands, which season 3 launched today. And that's kind of like the catch-all for other disgraceful stories that aren't just music. So we've done 2 seasons on Hollywood, 1 from the world of sports. This is our 2nd season on Hollywood right now. We launched with an episode today on Heath Ledger. And it's me doing the same dog and pony show I do at Disgraceland, just with different subject matter.
I feel like you're not going to have a lot of material for the sports one, for people behaving badly.
No. They're all pretty. They're very polite young men. And they keep it real low-key, usually.
They keep it tight.
The role models are supposed to, I think Karen and I both understand how hard it is to do a music podcast because you can't put any fucking music in it. Mm. So the fact that you score it all yourself, I feel like is the workaround.
Mm.
But we've been pitched music podcasts before for the network and it's like, well, we can't do that. You'll get sued multiple times.
Right. Come to us. Come to Double Elvis, our company. We'll collab. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All we do is music podcasts, except the 2
Love
sports
it.
And Hollywood ones I just mentioned. But yeah, being a musician has helped. And in the beginning, I scored everything. I score it now myself, but I have other musicians who work with me. And that way we can do things fast and quick. And honestly, like that's part of the most fun part of it for me is being able to fuck with the music while it still makes me feel like I'm a half-assed musician, which is
because you can. So cool. I mean, that's the thing is like put it all out there. It's your podcast and that's how you started. So like it makes perfect sense. It's like, I'm talking, I'm writing, I'm writing this music. Get a load of me, Jake Brennan.
It's a one-man band with a 15 full-time staff of employees around me.
Right. It's a small little
industry.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to see you again. It's been so long. Thank you so much for doing this with us.
Thank you for having me. I really had fun. I'm so stoked we got to do this and I can't wait to see you guys in person again, hopefully sometime soon.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Totally.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
All right. Stay sexy and don't get murdered.
Rock and roll.
Perfect.
Amazing.
That's perfect.
Amazing.
Oh my God, that was so great. Thank you.
Jake, thank you so much.
Jake, you.
All right. We'll see you around, guys. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?
Ah. This has been an Exactly Right production.
Our senior producers are Hannah Kyle Crichton and Natalie Rin.
Our producer is Alejandra Keck.
This episode was engineered and mixed by Andrew Eben.
Email your hometowns and fucking hoorays to myfavoritemurder@gmail.com.
Follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at myfavoritemurder and on Twitter at myfavemurder.
Listen, subscribe, and leave us a review on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Goodbye.